Welcome to Truthiverse, the number one podcast for free and discerning minds. I'm your host, Brendan Murphy, author and founder of The Truthiversity. As a freedom hacker and truth addict, it's my job to help you reclaim yourself from illusion and live in your power. Living in truth sets you free to holistically upgrade your entire life so you can explore infinite possibility. Join me as we hack our way to a higher evolution. Hey, and welcome. Truthiverse is an audience-supported podcast and an audience-supported Substack as well. You can find me over there on Substack at Official Brendan Murphy. And if you enjoy this work, please join the growing body of consciously evolving minds and voyage with us into forgotten and forbidden realms of knowledge. So do hit that like button, share with your fellow seekers, and if you hadn't yet, please do consider becoming a paid subscriber, whether it's over on my Substack or through buying me a coffee right here via the podcast. Also, feel free to check out my private evolutionary accelerator, Evolve Yourself, over at evolveyourself.live for the free masterclass. And of course, I do invite you to join me inside the members-only Truthiversity for all premium content, including part two of every podcast. See truthiversity.com for more information. Researching, writing, and podcasting is what I do full-time, so thanks in advance for your support. It does mean a lot to me. Hey, welcome. It's been a little while between drinks. I'm about to bring in Daniel Reuters. We had an excellent little chat, and I know you're going to absolutely love this. It's a gem. And before I do, I just wanted to let you know that for those of you who've been hanging out to catch the How to Evolve Yourself Without Hard Work or Meditation live masterclass, we've been running that at certain times of the day, a little bit restrictive for certain people in certain time zones. Obviously, not everyone can be available at every time of day or every day. So we've changed the format now. We've made it a little bit more flexible for you out there in terms of different time zones, different times of day. So we've given you some more options there to check the masterclass out. So for those of you who are interested, who've been meaning to catch it, head to evolveyourself.live. On the other hand, we have the 9 to Thrive Masterclass, which Amy and I run. We've been running it every Friday for a while now, at the same time, same day. But yeah, again, you know, people can't always make it at that time. So we've made that a little more flexible and convenient for you as well. So if you want to go and check that out, this is where we get into the business in a box stuff that we are training people inside of our Freedom Quest Academy, which we run together. So if you want to see that masterclass, see what it's all about. If you're looking to get into the online entrepreneurial space and set up a separate stream of income, head to www.onlinefreedomhackers.com/thrive. So www.onlinefreedomhackers.com/thrive. All right, with those little announcements out of the way, here is Daniel Reuters and myself. Enjoy. All right, so I am joined on this episode by Daniel Reuters, who, well, this has been months in the making, so I've been looking forward to this for a while now. We finally managed to actually meet in the same space-time juncture here and get on a face-to-face meeting. So I'll give you a nutshell version of Daniel. He is, or was, I should say, was a naturopath nutritionist with over 10 years clinical experience. He has lectured at many of Australia's leading natural medicine colleges and universities and currently runs a health education website called Humanly. And he also recently published a very well-received book on the subject of terrain and contagion called Can You Catch a Cold? So we're going to dig into that as well. Without further ado, mate, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Brendan. I know it's been a while. It's been, as you said, a few months in the making, but really pleased to finally have the opportunity to sit down and talk with you. And I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yes. Yeah, likewise. So, mate, where we can begin wherever you like. Obviously, you know, we want to talk up this book and let people know about it. Maybe we can drill into some of the subjects around it. But I guess before we do, I usually like to ask people, you know, how you ended up here. You know, what was the path for, you know, Daniel Reuters getting to where he's at now? But what sparked your interest in you know, this world?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's been a long time in the making, just like this podcast, mate. unwell as a child, to the point where I had to stop playing my favorite sport, which was soccer. And I feel like it was going to turn into something, possibly a career. I was doing some like squad work and things like that, but got to the point where I got so sick I couldn't walk. Wow. So I had to give that away. And the doctors basically said it's growing pains and I'm putting it on. I'm attention seeking, which, between the ages of sort of 8 and 9, I don't know if children are that smart to put it on and give up their favorite sport. But my family, my mom and dad, found a chiropractor actually, and he did some dietary changes and a bit of physical therapy with me, and I improved, which was really profound. And that sort of left a lasting impression on me, and I wanted to be a chiropractor ever since. But unfortunately, they didn't offer chiropractic in my hometown, Brisbane. And I chose the next available thing, which was naturopathy. So I went and did that several years after I graduated from high school. And from then on, I just worked in clinical practice, got in doing some tutoring at some colleges, and worked my way up to a senior lecturer, which I did for many, many years, and then resigned in 2022 because I just had a gut full of all the rubbish that I had to teach, and couldn't ethically do it anymore.
Wow.
So I resigned, and I have had many wonderful things happen to me since that time, and I've also had a lot of spare time to write a book. So it all worked out for the best.
Yeah. Well, okay, so a couple of questions about that little, background spiel. Did you get to firstly, okay, there's two things and I want to mention them before I forget them. So I wanted to ask you, what was it specifically about the curriculum that you were teaching that you didn't like? And I want to circle back to that. But I also wanted to ask before that, when you were studying naturopathy, did you get in there before, I mean, because it's been hijacked. From what I can see, naturopathy has been hijacked by Big Pharma essentially. So what was your education like? Because I know they're not really teaching terrain in most places anymore. It's germ theory, contagion stuff. So did you get in before that kind of happened, or transitional period, or where were you in that timeline? Do you know?
Yeah, I feel as though I was at the very tail end of getting the last remnants of what natural medicine used to be.
Yeah.
And then it sort of slowly just got watered down and phased out. And I feel like natural medicine's basically been systematically dismantled over the last decade. And it's just a shell of what it once was. It no longer really is natural medicine. As you said, it's been taken over. And I would agree with that to the point now where we're just, well, we used to train, I used to train green pharmacists, essentially. So client comes in and you just run a barrage of functional tests and blood tests, and then you prescribe vitamin pills based on those blood tests. And it's so reductionistic, not very holistic. And towards the end of my time teaching, I did try and bring in some of those holistic principles back into the curriculum, and got reprimanded for that actually, because
Wow.
supposedly that's not part of natural medicine degrees anymore. So go figure.
We don't want nature in a natural medicine degree.
That's it. That's it. So
Wow.
that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me, was that I couldn't teach the principles of naturopathy and natural medicine to students in these degrees. And also because they came after me for the work I was doing on my website, Humanly.
Right.
So I thought, if you guys are going to try and encroach upon the work I'm doing in my private life, then if you're not going to support me like that, then I'm not going to support you. And I basically resigned. So yeah, I haven't looked back since then.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love it. I love it when people take a stand on principle like that. It's awesome. I've had similar stories from like Mike Donio and Andy Kaufman on the show, where they just had that line in the sand moment. And it was all three of you actually, but it was through the Convid sort of timeline that all happened. Yeah. So what when you were teaching this stuff, in the lead up to you quitting, what kinds of things were really grinding your gears in terms of what you had to follow in the curriculum and share with the students?
Oh, where do I start? Seriously, it's so watered down, it's so far removed from what natural medicine should be. So what it should be is that There's an understanding that the body has the capacity or an innate capacity to heal itself when you give it the things that it needs, which are essentially the things found in nature, sunlight and fresh air and connecting to the earth and eating good and healthy food and love, sleep, having meaning and purpose in your life. Just like these very basic, simple things that you need to survive and thrive as a human being. And if you don't have those, then there's going to be a problem. So it's shifted away from that to disease is a hard thing to understand. We don't know why people are sick. The body can't heal itself. All we can do is manage symptoms. We can't treat any diseases. We are just the poor sidekick to modern medicine. And we may be able to support what medicine's already doing, but we have no real active role as primary healthcare professionals or practitioners, even though they claim that we do. And it's gone from being a holistic practice to a mechanistic practice, where now we don't look at the whole person and address all of the things that are lacking in their diet and lifestyle. Instead, we run some tests, some blood tests or some functional tests like stool testing and breath testing and these kinds of things, which are invalid. They have not been validated. They're anti-scientific. And then based on those tests, we prescribe supplements and pills and potions to people. And that's basically what it's become, which is really sad.
Yeah, I can see why that would bother you and eventually wear you down. It's funny because, you know, my partner Amy was initially training to be a naturopath. She wanted to, there was a point in time where she wanted to do that. But as she went through the material, she realized that, you know, she started learning about the legal side of it and the way that the legal restrictions placed on naturopaths essentially prevent them from actually being able to help anybody. So she was like, well, I'm not going to waste my time studying this to get a qualification that's actually going to be essentially useless because of the strictures placed on the profession itself. So she, you know, took another path.
I have learned some interesting things in the last few years, and that is that the peak health bodies, the powers that be, actually put out the true and correct information about how to heal the body. They give this information to us, but because it's so simple, we overlook it.
Right.
And we think that there's something more to it, and we get confused. There's all this conflicting information that we don't understand what disease is, and it's complicated, and it's the cause is unknown, and you can only ever manage symptoms, and you need to take a drug and all this sort of stuff. So we get confused. But by and large, they do put out the information regarding what a human being needs to thrive and survive, which is what I've just mentioned. Mm. Like, I don't think anyone would disagree with me that you need fresh water, clean air, meaningful relationships, purpose in your life, healthy, fresh food, good quality sleep, exercise, getting out in the sun, getting out in nature, like spending time outdoors. These are all very sort of well accepted things. They're not outlandish. They're not out there. They're not crazy. But the thing is, you have to be doing those things in order for the body to have the foundational building blocks, the raw materials to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not doing those things, then the body can't do what it needs to do. So like we would understand this with a plant. If there's a sick plant, you go, right, is it getting enough sun? No, it's not. It's in the wrong location. Is it getting enough water? No, it's not getting watered. The owners are not taking care of the plant. Oh, well, maybe we should give it some sun and water first and then see what happens. Same with a human being. Someone comes in, they're sick. Are you doing all of those seven or eight things? No, I'm only doing four of them. Okay, well, we need you to do all eight of them, and then let's see how the body responds.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't do those things because they're cheap, they're simple, there's a low barrier to implement those into your diet and your lifestyle. And for those reasons, we think that they're not important and they're not effective. Mm. So we just dismiss them. So this is really the focus I'm taking now, is just promoting those things that are already promoted by government health bodies.
Your big shill.
Right. But by doing that, you don't have to make any outlandish claims. Mm. You don't have to promote anything that's dubious. You don't have to push magic pills and potions and expensive treatments and therapies onto people. It's like everything that you need is already there. It's provided by nature. Mm. And it really just simplifies things down. So this is the approach I'm taking now. And I think a lot of people in the natural medicine space get caught up when they start doing things that are more risky and unnecessary, where they're ordering these expensive tests and they're prescribing massive doses of certain nutrients and herbs and things, which can potentially cause harm. And I actually think are unwarranted and unnecessary in 99% of the cases.
Mm.
So when you take those things out of the equation, I don't think there's ever been a instance where someone's been harmed by breathing too much clean air,
mm.
or they've been harmed by changing their diet and eating more fresh food, or getting outside and doing a little bit more physical activity. Like, these things are low risk. They're well accepted to promote health, and they are those essential things that a human being needs. So when we understand this, it all sort of becomes a lot more simplified, and it takes a lot of that uncertainty and confusion away from what do I need to do? What is the magic combination of things that I must do to fix my body?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's sort of that we've been marketed to for so long by, you know, the technocrats and the allopathic medical crowd, that, you know, that all their shiny things and technological whiz bang stuff, all their pills and potions, we've had that in our faces for so long that we have lost touch with our folk roots, where, you know, you use it as something that's in your garden and it doesn't cost anything. And it's like you're saying, you're talking about simplicity. And that conditioning is really, you know, I agree that that's helped us to lose sight of the power of the simple things. And just that's really what it's all about. Like, I think you've rattled off a pretty good list there. You know, you touched on the emotional aspect, the psychological, the physiological, sunlight, clean air. I mean, and we've just been marketed to so long that that stuff just seems outlandishly, like, too simple to be effective. It's got to be more complicated than that. Like, when we have a symptom now, we've learned that we need the intervention of a technical expert who can, you know, fiddle with us to get us, you know, back to the correct sort of parameters. And if they can't do it well, you know, all hope is lost, kind of thing. It's kind of a weird place we've wound up in.
And even a step further is we've also confused ourselves with what disease actually is.
Right.
And when you don't know what disease is and you don't know what health is and you're in the health industry, how do you know what you're treating? And then if you don't know what disease is, how do you know what you're treating? And if you don't know what health is, how do you know what you're trying to achieve for your clients? And again, I think people have been hoodwinked into thinking that disease is random, that it's like this thing lurking out there, that it's just waiting to pounce on an unlucky person, and we don't know why. It's your genetics, or it's a germ lurking in the shadows, or it's just this random thing that happens to unlucky people, or your body turns on itself. It's like this weird, mysterious thing. It's such a problem, so confusing. But actually, the opposite is the closer to the truth. I've been looking through some of the anthropological evidence, and like even reports from colonists who went to countries where before they had been colonized. So when some of the European settlers went to America or to the Pacific Islands or Australia or these other types of countries, very detailed reports about how surprised they were to see that there was no disease. No disease, no diabetes, no cancer, no heart disease, no obesity. Their teeth were in perfect condition. They didn't have skin issues. They didn't have gray hair. Their hair wasn't falling out. They were in peak physical condition. Like, so how is that possible? Yeah. They didn't have any of these. They didn't have any access to these wonderful modern medicines that we have today. They were just living in harmony with nature. And then what you see over time is the more adulterated their way of living became by this sort of integration with the West, the more disease ravaged these communities. So what you then understand is when you live in close harmony with nature, there is no disease. It doesn't happen. It's not a thing. Disease is a man-made consequence of a sick, toxic Western lifestyle. And then when you think about, okay, well, then what is disease? Well, disease is actually the healing response. We think that the disease is the bad thing, when actually what happens is the damage happens first to the tissue, and then the body responds to heal itself. And that's where you get the symptoms and the pain and everything else, which is actually the answer to the problem. So when we've confused that and we've gone, oh, the symptoms are the disease, and now we have to suppress the symptoms, actually what you're doing is suppressing the healing response. So it's all very confused. Like, yeah, it's confused, it's back to front. And the answers to the questions that we seek are already there. Our ancestors already knew how to achieve living in perfect harmony or relative harmony with nature. And I'm not saying that there was like 0% of disease. There may have very well been sick people. I don't know. I wasn't around. All I can go off is these reports in these journals and this anthropological research. But by and large, there were no diseases, not even infectious diseases. There was no like cholera or chickenpox or measles or yellow fever or any of this stuff. It wasn't a thing. There was no depression. Like none of these things existed. But yes, there may have been instances where people got sick, but that could have been from exposure to something in your environment. And you were probably the exception to the rule in those situations. Whereas now you've got 70% of the population overweight and obese and suffering from cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and we just accept that as a way of life. And the opposite is the truth. And I think people will be very surprised to learn this. And once you understand this information, you go, oh, so what you're telling me is that I just have to get back to my roots. I just got to live more simply. I've got to get back and connect with nature a bit more and get outside and do those things that you just mentioned. Oh, that's not so hard. And once people understand that, they'll be motivated and empowered and inspired to do it because they know that it's actually important and it's the answer to the problem. Whereas now they don't do it because they think the only way to health is through an arbiter who wears a white coat, who's been studying for 20 years, who's got a scalpel and a prescription pad. Yeah. So there's a lot that needs to be undone. And I'm not saying that we throw out things like modern medicine. I think they have their place, certainly. But for emergency care, not chronic disease care, not very good at that. So yeah, it has its place. And then for the chronic stuff, the answer is actually very simple.
I know you know the Bigglesons. Adam likes to remind people of his dad Harvey's quote about modern medicine not curing a single chronic condition in 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
How
so
crazy.
it's nuts. It's nuts. And yet this is the gold standard, and everything else is quackery.
Yeah, and to the point where they don't even have an understanding in their curriculum that the body does have the capacity to heal itself.
That's
Like
nuts. It's so
that's a
wild.
taboo thing. Yet you can see that happen before your very eyes. Like if you break a bone, or if you get a cut on your skin, you can see your body physically healing itself. So, like, why is, if it can heal the skin or it can heal the bone, why is any other tissue an exception to the rule? It's not. The body can heal any tissue. You just have to remove what's causing the damage to the tissue and then give the body what it needs to heal itself and then get out of the way and just let nature do its thing. That's really the essence of what natural medicine is really about. It's not a mystery,
No.
what I'm trying to get at here. And the word doctor means teacher. So if you're teaching someone something, it means the curriculum's already there. The understanding is already there. The doctors back in 1700s, 1800s, that knowledge that they had about disease and healing, which is all the stuff I'm talking about now, they had accumulated that knowledge over like 2000 plus years from the time of Hippocrates. Yet when we got to the end of the 20th century and we had this germ theory sort of infiltrate the medical profession, we threw out all of our previous knowledge for this line of thinking that the germ is going to kill you. And if a germ doesn't get you, it's then your genes. And if your genes don't get you, then it's just the body turning on itself. It just somehow creates a cancer or inflammation just comes out of nowhere and gets you. So we've really we've gone backwards in our understanding. And our understanding was at its peak in about 1850, 1900 when it comes to health and medicine. Even though we think now that actually those guys were in the dark ages and they didn't know anything. They actually had the most advanced understanding. And all we have to do is just go back and, you know, take a feather out of their cap and look at the stuff that they'd put in the textbooks and reconnect with that old knowledge. And that's really as complicated as it needs to get.
Yeah, well, I mean that harks back to your point about the these indigenous populations pre colonization. Like they didn't know what they were doing. Like they didn't treat their lifestyle or their lives as some kind of health protocol because they weren't really familiar with what we deal with, which is this epidemic of all sorts of illnesses and symptoms and this and that. And so they had no reference point in a way for that. It was just the way they were. Their health was just normality. They weren't doing anything special. It was just that they lived in nature and as part of the land. And that in itself, just the lack of toxicity, you know, pre-industrial, all that stuff, you know, weren't exposed to all the garbage that we are now. It was so simple, like you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. They lived in harmony with nature. They weren't polluting their environment. You can only be as healthy as the environment you're living in. Those two things are not disconnected from one another. So if you're pumping pollution into the atmosphere and polluting your water with hormones and microplastics and monocrop farming your food and spraying it with poison and injecting babies at birth with stuff and popping pills and being exposed to electromagnetic frequencies and disrupting your circadian rhythm with artificial lighting. And like I could go on and on and on. All these things take us further and further and further away from living in harmony with nature. So disease is just a consequence of that. The more diseased a population is just a metric for how far removed they are from living in harmony and balance with their environment. So yeah, those natives never had disease because they were using what was available to them in their environment. They were eating what was local, seasonal, and fresh. What presented itself to them, they were building with natural material. Like there was no leftovers, there was no waste, there was no like toxic man-made chemical production contaminating their environment. There was no dissatisfaction with their life. There was no depression or anxiety worrying about all these modern things that we're worrying about now. It was a much more simple way of life. So the problem with all of this Western living now is that we're so far disconnected and we've become so accustomed to all these creature comforts that we have that we could never conceive of going back to living like cavemen. But I don't think we have to. I actually think there was a bit of a sweet spot around, even like if you look back in the 1930s and 40s, before we really started messing with our food supply and using plastics in a widespread manner, things were a lot better. There wasn't as many sick people. So we could still have quite a comfortable way of living, and a comfortable way of existing in this world without having to live in caves and do all these sort of very crude, rudimentary survival techniques. Yeah.
And that in that era, people were a lot less sedentary too, weren't
Yeah, people had to move. I was kind of thinking about this today, actually. Like land is so expensive that people can't afford to buy a big parcel of land. So then you're forced to live in a concrete box somewhere in a city, and you spend your time at home in that concrete box, sitting on a couch watching TV or being on your computer. You sit in a car on your way to work, and then you do the same at work. You sit down at a desk and basically do nothing. Like there's very few professions now where people are actually physically active compared to what there was back in the 40s and 50s. Like people worked the land. That was how you survived, was that you grew your own food. You had your own land. You had your own animals. You probably built your own dwelling. You had a community of people that you lived with. You were active and physical, and you spent your time outside. And land was affordable. You could go and get, multiple acres and do this and sell your wares and make a good living, or a sufficient enough living to the point where you weren't a debt slave and you had, all these problems hanging over your head that drove you into this depressive state and had you in this tailspin until you're going to retire and eventually, have some time to yourself. But yeah, we've really moved away from that way of living, and it's a shame. And it really goes to show how disconnected and how unsustainable our way of life is now, because basically everyone's got some sort of illness or disease. Everyone's stressed, everyone's depressed. Very few people are happy. Very few people have meaning and purpose in their life. And yeah, I can't see how we can continue down this road for much longer, because nature always wins. Yeah. Nature will bite back at some point. We can only keep prodding the bear for so long. And when that happens, because we've moved so far away from living in harmony with Mother Nature, when we're snapped back to reality and no, like people don't know how to grow their own food or do any of these things, then they're going to find it really difficult to survive, because they would never had to have milked a cow or hunted an animal or sourced their own water or grown some food. People these days don't even know how to iron their own shirt. So there's some problems there, which may be by design or it may be fault of our own. I don't really know. But I think the answer is, let's get back to basics while we still have the chance.
Yeah, and a lot of it seems to me, like the background stress of living in the time that we live in. We've got this incredible debt-based, wonderful debt-based banking system that creates this eternal sort of inflation, the devaluation of currency. People have got to work harder, they gotta scrounge just to get by more and more and more. So there's this rising tide of like anxiety and stress just to survive in the background, on top of all the other stuff that we've covered. So do you focus much on that side of things as well, like the economic driving forces behind anything much, or are you more interested in the, I don't know, the sort of the things that we can sort of control personally?
I have thought about these things, and I think there's a simple way to get ourselves out of it. Each individual can get themselves out of it. You don't have to be a debt slave for the rest of your life. I was in this position several years ago. And the way that my life changed was that I listened to my internal guiding compass. So there was this little voice inside me saying, and everyone's got this. Everyone's got this. They just have to tune in. But we're so distracted with what's going on out there, we forget to listen to what's going on in here. So I had this little voice inside me saying, quit your job, quit your job, quit your job. And at first it was like this little niggling thing. I'm like, oh yeah, I really don't like my job, but I'm going to keep doing it because I got debt and I got to afford this way of life and got to save for a house and I got to get the big flashy car and I got to do the overseas travel and do all these things. Got to be successful, you know? And that voice got louder and louder and louder to the point where it was screaming at me every day as soon as I woke up, like, you better fucking quit your job. And one day I did. And when I did that, and I let go of that fear of how am I going to live and survive, wonderful things started happening. And like, how did those things happen? I don't know. By quitting my job, I allowed that flow of energy to come, and all the things that were in the escrow waiting for me that I'd possibly manifested were now able to come into my life. And they happened very quickly and it came very fast. But that was, I could only really do that and tune into those thoughts and feelings when I quit my job and I had a second to breathe.
Mm.
It's like, oh God, okay, I have to worry about going to work tomorrow. I just got some time. So I just like go down to the park with my dog and sit under a tree for hours,
mm-hmm.
and just chill. And within a few days, I started having all this information coming to me and all these new thoughts and all these ideas. And it was profound. And I don't know where that stuff came from. It just came. But I think that was always there. I just wasn't listening because I was so concerned with all the BS going on out in the world, all the distractions, that I couldn't listen to that internal guiding compass. And when I started listening to that and asking myself questions, listening to my gut instinct about decisions that I should or shouldn't make, just listened to what was in my heart. I followed my heart and everything turned out fine. Like, I got myself out of massive amounts of debt just by listening to myself. Now, I think anyone can do this. I think the problems come when we're resistant and we act incongruently with what that internal guiding compass is telling us to do. Because then we drag ourselves away from our true path.
Yeah.
And then you create turbulence and problems and you have resistance there. So things don't come as easily into your life. And I know a lot of people don't sort of see eye to eye with this or agree with it. And either did I until I did it.
Right.
So this is the big problem. Like, we're in this system where you have to work, you've got the debt, you have to pay for these things, and people are too fearful and scared to just let it go and act with integrity and follow their heart and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that's a great thing for people to hear as well. Just like your excuse me, you know, how that panned out for you and what happens when you kind of surrender to the process and trust. Like, it takes a certain amount of trust in, you know, the world, the universe, or what have you, to do that and be able to do it in the first place. And a lot of people, like you're saying, the external reference point, you know, out there, the world will tell me what I should do. And that's so deeply ingrained, you know, because we're all sent off to like school and, you know, subjected to all these authority figures and all this programming. And then, you know, the idea that you actually might have your own internal compass starts to look more and more ludicrous over time, you know. And then it's like that little voice has to kind of be like you said, yours was kind of screaming at you before you start listening to it. But yeah, everyone has that, as you were saying, everyone has that internal guidance system. It's just, for the most part, I think it's just been hijacked by the external systems around us.
Yep, that's right. When you're focused on the external things, you don't listen to the internal things. And this is even a way for people to heal or to start healing themselves, is to ask your body the question, what's going on? What's wrong? What do I need? What's the answer? And it will tell you. And you have to be open and receptive to it. And you can't have fear, and you can't be scared around what that message will tell you, and you can't like run away from it. Because if you are truly able to just sit, ask the question, and the first thing that comes to you, that's usually the answer. And then you act on that and you don't second guess it. And this is a way to also like not only find out information about why am I sick or what do I need to do to get better, but it's also a way to find your purpose in life.
Mm.
So if people find like, oh, I don't really know what I'm meant to be doing, like just ask.
Mm.
Ask and it will come to you. And when you follow that, internal compass or like whatever it is, I don't know if it's like there's all kinds of different names for this phenomenon. But when you follow that, I think life becomes easier. It becomes more enjoyable. It becomes fun. It doesn't become a drag. It's always interesting. There's always something fun happening. And even when there's things that you wouldn't consider fun happening, it's an adventure. And it's like, it's intriguing and it's mysterious. It's you're living, it's like a movie and you're the main actor, right? And you're living this out and you're aware of what's going on, and you're more responsive. So yeah, it doesn't always have to be like always roses. Mm. Like there are going to be ups and downs, but it's how you respond to those ups and downs, which is the key. So it's like being on a roller coaster. It can be two people on a roller coaster, right? Sitting next to each other. And at the end of that roller coaster ride, you can say to one person, how was it? Okay, that was awesome. I want to do it again. Second person, oh, that was horrible. I never want to do it again in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Same ride. Yeah. It's just how they responded to all the twists and turns and the ups and downs that made it enjoyable for them. So it's the same with life. When you go through these things, it's how you respond to it, which really matters. And when people start to let go of all this stuff that doesn't serve them, which is bombarded in our TV screens, newspapers, on the internet, whatever else.
The mediocrity.
When you let go of that, what's that?
I said the mediocrity programming.
Yeah. When you let go of that and you start to take control of your own journey, you start to become the main actor in your own movie. You embody that. Miraculous and wonderful things start to happen and your life really does unfold and it takes these unexpected turns that you never thought were possible. And yeah, it's, I think a lot that prevents people from doing that is they're always asking how. Like, oh, if I quit my job, how am I going to pay the bills? Or how am I going to do this? Or how is this going to work? It's like, no, it's not about the how. You got to let go of the how and just allow whatever that is out there, whatever energy that is out there, it will always provide the things that you need to get you to the point where you're meant to be.
Mm.
That's a hard thing to let go, but I'm not fully there yet, but I'm trying slowly, slowly.
Yeah, right. It's a journey, right? And we're all participants in the journey until, you know, we go into the next phase of the journey and it looks a little bit different. But yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think, you know, you mentioned earlier, most people aren't particularly happy or satisfied or fulfilled with their lives because, to me anyway, because they are taking on the programming of the external system, which means their internal, you know, purpose for being here, whatever that is, their internal purpose is not being played out. It's not being fulfilled. It's not being acted on. So there's a huge disconnect, which leads people into, you know, the depression and the despondency and the, what am I doing here with my life? I don't know what it's all about. But like you said, if you just take the time to go and sit under a tree with your dog, you can start getting some pretty profound answers.
Yeah. And like you mentioned the word depression there, and a lot of the Western world are depressed. There's never any depression in the native tribes that lived around the world. They never had this. They didn't even have a word for this. They didn't even know it was a thing. There's even tribes recently, I think they done studies in the 80s and 90s on tribes that hadn't been really contacted with the West, and they didn't know about this thing called depression. It wasn't a thing. Like, what is depression? If you put your hand on a hot plate, it's hot, take your hand away. Not going to do that again. That was stupid. So that's your body telling you don't put your hand on the hot plate. It's going to burn you. So your body's smart like that. It can tell you, it can warn you about things that you should and shouldn't do. How does it tell you that you really shouldn't be working that slave job, or you really should get out of that abusive relationship, or you really should do something different with your life? You're not on the right path. It's going to make you feel crap when you're doing it. And people push through that because they feel like, well, this is what I'm meant to be doing. This is what society tells me I have to do. I have to work 50-hour weeks, and I have to get the big mortgage, and I have to do all these things and keep running on the treadmill because that's what society dictates.
Yeah.
But actually, you don't have to do those things. And if you listen to yourself and then you start doing what your body and your mind and your soul is trying to guide you towards, the depression goes away because now you're acting congruently with who you really are.
Exactly.
So you're not putting your hand on that hot plate all the time. You're not walking into that dreaded office for 10 hours a day and interacting with people that you don't want to interact with, doing something that you hate.
Mm.
It's a self-preservation mechanism, depression. Yeah. And it won't go away with all these different therapies. It will only go away when you address the underlying cause. And I don't know what those causes are for every individual, but this is one way that we can start to approach it from a different perspective.
Mm. Yeah. As I think, I would say stop doing things that insult your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really nice way of putting it.
So when you talk about, say something like cancer, for example, as one particular type of manifestation of symptoms, how do you see cancer as a phenomenon?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think of it in several different ways, and I don't know the answer, but I do know that we didn't have cancer at all. I'm not sure, but anywhere near the extent that we do now, 100 years ago, it wasn't a thing in these native tribes. Like, even the anthropologists, when they were looking at these native people, were saying they don't have cancer. And they don't really, it's not a thing. Like, they don't really talk about it. It's not like, a lot of them didn't even really have an understanding or words for these diseases. So what that means to me is that it's a consequence of something that we're doing with our toxic Western lifestyle. Now, mm-hmm. is it a consequence of not living true to your purpose? Is it from an emotional trauma? Is it because we're being poisoned? Possibly a combination of all of those things. We look at cancer as the body doing something wrong. Oh, it's a genetic issue, and now your cells are dividing abnormally and it's going to kill you. I actually don't think the body ever does anything wrong. It only wants the best for you. It is there to serve you. It is there to keep you alive and to keep you active and healthy. It's there for you. It's not working against you. So if we look at cancer from that perspective, let's say someone's living in a super toxic environment, and your organs of elimination are overloaded, your kidney and liver is overloaded. Well, now the body's got to deal with those toxins some other way. So what if it decides to create a second liver or a second kidney or some other organ of elimination, and you start growing a mass?
Mm.
Now, they say that some people claim that cancer is a fungus. If you look at what fungus does in nature, it bioremediates and biotransforms and biosequesters toxic material.
Mm-hmm.
So is it possible that cancer is doing that inside our body? It's trying to take some of the load off these other compromised organs. And until such time as you clean your act up, it's just going to keep creating additional livers and making them bigger and bigger all over your body. That's one possible way. Another way might be that it's just a storage container. It's like a rubbish bag where the liver and kidney can't deal with all the stuff that's coming in, whether it be emotional, whether it be like a physical toxin or some chemical burden, can't deal with whatever that is. So it's just going to put it in a rubbish bag. It just keeps putting all that leftover rubbish in the bag, gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until such time as it presses on a nerve or a blood vessel and it causes some life-threatening issues. So if you can deal with whatever the underlying cause is, then you can empty out that rubbish bag and the body will be free of the disease. And the last thing you want to do is go and poke a hole in that bag and go and see what's in there and start trying to burn it and kill it and ablate it and poison it, thinking that the cancer is the problem. I actually think the cancer is the thing trying to save you. And a lot of people would take issue with that perspective, but this is where my journey and my understanding about health has taken me. We've confused what cancer really is and what its true role and purpose is. These are some ways that I think about cancer. There's also really interesting reports in the medical literature, and I actually talk about some of this in my book, of people who had terminal cancer. Their bodies riddled with massive tumors. And they heard information that a certain treatment was looking very prospective for reversing the tumor. And they got this treatment, and then the cancer went away, like literally shrank away to nothing, like orange-sized tumors all over their body just shrank to nothing within a week or two, gone. And like this is in the medical literature. If people want to go and read about these cases, I'm happy to provide the links to them. And in like one instance, a guy heard that the treatment that he got wasn't good for cancer. So his tumors started coming back. And he was about to die, and his doctor said, oh, we don't want to lose this guy. Let's try a little experiment. We'll tell him that there's a new drug that's came out. It's super strength of the one that he originally got when his cancer reversed the first time. And we'll tell him that it's going to be double a dose. We're going to do really intensive therapy. It's a really strong drug. It's really, really good. And we're going to inject it with it. We're going to inject it into his body. We're going to tell him that it's this amazing drug, but we're lying to him. It's actually saline, but we're not going to tell him. And when they did this to this particular case, to this gentleman, his cancer went away, disappeared again, just as like it did the first time, with nothing but saline. So it wasn't any miraculous treatment that was fixing his body. It was his mind.
Exactly.
Power of belief reversed this guy's cancer, the placebo effect.
Right.
So regardless of what the cause of the cancer was, I don't know what caused this guy's cancer. It could have been any of those things that I mentioned. And regardless of what the cancer really is there for, is it a rubbish bag? Is it an additional detoxification process? Is it something else? I don't know. But what I do know is that he reversed it.
Yep.
And he reversed it with the power of belief. So all of those other things are really inconsequential.
Yeah. It's like at the end of the day, whatever the purpose of the cancer is on a physiological level, your mind can literally remedy it, make it go away, make it disappear. If the conviction, you know, like that guy had a high level of conviction, right? If the conviction is there, you can do unbelievable things for your health. And externally from the body as well. I think I know the case you're talking about. Was this the Krebiosin one where he eventually there was an unfortunate he saw like a news report and it was like a, oh no, this new wonder drug's actually not that great. And then it just destroyed his hopes and his optimism that one last time, and then his cancer came back, and that was unfortunately the end of him.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's multiple instances of this being reported. They call it spontaneous regression. So
Yeah.
if people want to look this up in the medical literature, you just type in spontaneous regression, and there are hundreds and hundreds of cases occurring every single year, hundreds of cases. And yes, there's millions of people supposedly dying of cancer every year, but there's this unspoken minority of people where one day they've got cancer and the next day they don't, and they've done nothing. So how does that happen? Oh, well, we don't really know. It's just this chance, luck of the draw thing, and we don't really have any understanding about why it happens. Maybe it was the power of belief. Maybe they stopped poisoning themselves. Maybe whatever it was that they were lacking in their life, they've now included into their diet and lifestyle, and it's addressed the underlying issue, and now the body doesn't need the tumor anymore. Like, there's so many potential factors around that. I mean, I don't claim to know what each of those are in every specific individual, but I do know that we can harness the power of our mind to heal the body. And this isn't just for reversing disease. This also happens to create disease as well. So we know that people, when they're told that they're exposed to things like chemotherapy, when they're given saline, their hair falls out and they get nausea and they start getting muscle wastage and all these things. But in fact, they were just exposed to saline. They were under the impression that they were getting chemotherapy. So again, the belief, the nocebo effect, created this illness. And a similar thing happens with the cold and flu. So they've done experiments where they've told people they got exposed to flu germs and cold germs. And in fact, all they were doing was exposing them to saline. But the power of belief was so great that when they exposed these people to so-called flu germs, within a few hours, they had full-blown colds and flus. And they come in the next day, so they monitored the people at night, like coughing and shivering and spluttering and all this mucus flowing out of their faces. And they came in the next morning, and like in a much not more nicer way than this, but they were like, "Gotcha.
Yeah.
We gave you saline." And they go, "Oh, what you mean you didn't give me flu germs?" And they're better within 15 minutes to an hour. Right. So like, yeah, it's the power of the mind, I think, is quite incredible, and we don't really give it enough credit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was my point with, what I like to call Clownvid 19 was, right from day one, I'm sure you noticed that the programming in the media, coming from the government, all their spokespeople, all the medical talking heads, the programming was so intense. It was 24/7, and it was obvious, to me that they were setting up the potential, at the very least, for a mass nocebo effect. And people, all these like hypochondriacs, like the kind of people who are like, oh my God, I've been exposed, and then the next hour they're sick as a dog just because of the belief and the idea and nothing more. And they've just spent millions and millions of dollars on this marketing campaign to brainwash people into the idea that there's this virus on the loose. That was a classic example, I think, of the nocebo effect in action, and exploited by people who know exactly what they're doing.
This is all validated in literature. People can go and look it up if they want to. If you just take the time to go and dig it up, and like, you don't have to, because I've done it in the book. Like,
Exactly. Right.
I've done all this hard work for people, and it took me years to write. But you're spot on. There is things called nocebo contagion and social contagion and mind viruses and mass psychogenic illness. Like, this is all validated in the psychological medical literature, where diseases can be manifested in people, a wide range of diseases, based on the power of belief, which is propelled by media reports. So the more convincing the media reports, the more repetitive they are, the more specific they are. So you're going to experience these symptoms at this time in this location. It's been recorded in the medical literature that, and for diseases other than cold and flu, that exactly what's reported in the media then happens at that place and time where it's been reported to happen.
Yeah.
Where the people have been told that it's going to happen. So there was actually a case of this in New Zealand. And this is an example I use in my book, where there was a antidepressant drug that came off patent. And they started using the generic drug instead. So I think in New Zealand, they can still advertise pharmaceutical drugs. And they put it out in the media saying, "This we're not using this particular drug anymore. We're going to start using this one. Anyone who's taking this old one, the new one that's getting replaced is associated with side effects like A, B, C, D, E, F, G." And they rattled off six-ish, half a dozen, maybe a little bit more side effects. And within a very short period of time, people who were taking this new drug started experiencing these side effects that they were being told to experience. Yet the actual complete list of side effects from that drug was like 20 or 30 items long, yet people never reported those other side effects. They only reported the ones that the media told them to expect. So if that can happen, right, through the power of suggestion, who's to say when there's a mass media marketing campaign spread across the entire world, every single country, all in unison, the same message at the same time, telling people they're going to experience the same symptoms, that it's a contagious thing, that it spreads, you need to be scared, it's going to kill the whole world. And then people start experiencing cold and flu symptoms and sore throats and loss of smell and taste. Oh, it must be this contagious illness. I think people got influenced by social contagion, mass psychogenic illness. I think that's what happened. And they rebranded the flu.
Yep.
So what illness was illness? Yeah, so we have to talk about what a cold and flu actually is. But this illness that people were going to experience anyway. I've got a case of the sniffles. Went to my doctor. They did a test. It's COVID. Oh, I got COVID. Any other year, it would have been a cold. Mm-hmm. Like, so there was that self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, the TV told me there was a thing coming, and I got it. So then you believe it, and now that you believed it, it confirms that reality, and you take that through with you for the rest of your life. It's really hard to undo that programming. What do you mean there's no virus, Brendan? I got it.
I had the symptoms. Come on now. You're saying you're effectively saying that you wish my grandmother was dead. Like, this is like there's no logic there. It's like, yeah. They've been so thoroughly hoodwinked. And I just want to say, you know, thank you for running us through that, Daniel, because ladies and gents, Daniel is absolutely validating everything that I was saying from the beginning of that whole cluster F. It was just such a mass mind control operation. And people, I think hopefully now people are starting to grasp, and it sounds like your book's really going to help with this, with the stuff on the placebo effect, nocebo effect, like the fact that when you are listening to the media reports, if you are putting any kind of stock in it, giving it any credibility, believing what they're reporting, you're opening yourself to being manipulated and manifesting your own illness, like your own symptoms of illness, which you're then going to interpret according to the program, which over the last 4 years has been CLOWNVID-19. You've got CLOWNVID, you know, the test, which doesn't test for anything, told you so. So this is being beautifully validated by Daniel's thorough research, which I'm very pleased to say. I'm kind of like, I'm having a little told you so moment.
Yeah, it's all there for people to find. They just have to take the time to look. And unfortunately, people don't have the time in like this stressful modern age to sit down and look through. There's like 11 or 1200 references in this book. I think possibly even more, which just presents the information as it is. Like, I don't make any claims. I don't try to steer people in any particular direction. I say, here's the evidence, and you make up your own mind. I think I include over 200 contagion experiments where they tried to make people sick by putting healthy people together with sick people. And no one got sick. Well, in some instances they did, but they were using artificial means of injecting foreign things into people's nostrils and respiratory tracts, and they got, you know, these sort of non-specific flu-like symptoms, and they said, oh, well, this is proof of transmission. But actually, when you look into this a little bit more, they were also doing control experiments where they were injecting people with saline and they were getting sick. They used mucus from healthy people and they were getting sick. They used other substances like cell culture fluids and things that weren't inoculated with viruses, and people still got sick. So yeah, like, the instances where people did fall ill doesn't actually prove that it was caused by a contagious illness. It was probably just a local reaction to having something foreign squirted up your nose.
Yeah.
So, and this is a thing that we're told, right, Brendan, is when there's a healthy person, they come in contact with a sick person, that sick person gives the healthy person their disease.
Yeah.
Now, that should be a really easy thing to prove. That's like one of the easiest experiments to do. You get a bunch of sick people, a bunch of healthy people, and you put them in a room and you see what happens. And they did this.
Mm-hmm.
They did it over and 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 over again. And by and large, nothing happened. Nothing happened. They couldn't prove, they couldn't demonstrate that contagion actually was a real phenomenon. They didn't just do this with the cold and flu. They did it with chickenpox and measles and scarlet fever and all these other different so-called highly infectious illnesses, which sort of that challenges this idea that the cold and flu are highly contagious and that you can pass it on with fleeting contact.
Yeah.
You know, you just walk past someone in the street and now all of a sudden I've got germs and I get sick. And like, this does happen though, right? Because I've been in situations where there's someone sick and then I get sick a few days later. It's like, oh, I must have caught something from them. From an early age, that's the story that we're told. From like the day you can walk, you're just hearing this, again, your parents in your ear, or the doctor or the nurse or the teacher or whoever, someone in a place of authority telling you that when there's a sick person around you, you have to stay away because they'll infect you. And then inevitably one day you come in contact with a sick person and then you get sick. So that confirms this fairy tale that you've been told. And then you believe it wholeheartedly with every single cell in your body that disease is contagious. So the next time you come in contact with a sick person, then you get sick. Now, was it because something was transferred between you, or was it because you believed that it was so? It may also be for other reasons as well, like common environmental exposure to certain things. So there are other reasons why disease may seem like it's spreading, but so far from my research and investigation into this, I haven't found any evidence for a contagious pathogen. I have found evidence for a nocebo contagion effect, a mass psychogenic illness effect from being exposed to certain chemicals and toxins in the environment that cause colds and flu symptoms. And a few other things, but by and large, this is sort of what we're dealing with here, is this misunderstanding about contagion. And that's hard to undo, this belief, because we've had it for our entire lives. It would be like believing in Santa Claus until you're 40 and believing it wholeheartedly. And then one day someone's like, actually, you know, Santa's not real. But you believe it every day until you're 40 years of age, it'd be hard to let go of that, even though we know that Santa isn't real.
well, but I've seen the carrots that the reindeers were eating out, so on the backyard. So, I don't know, Dan, you sound like you're a bit sort of bit out there. Yeah, and that's it. For people who are stuck in that paradigm, you any kind of different perspective just sounds absolutely ludicrous. But we can only share what we know and share our research and our thoughts around things. It sounds like this book that you've just released is going to save people a lot of time and energy in doing that kind of digging. They don't have to do it now because you've done it. Sounds like there's some very compelling material in there, and I've heard that it's gotten some really solid reviews too from other people who are known sort of figures in the field. So I definitely think it sounds like everyone should go and get their hands on a copy one way or another. Maybe we could just mention quickly what is the best way for people to grab that, mate?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon at the moment. So you can just jump on amazon.com.au or amazon.com. It's available in a few different countries. And just type in, Can You Catch a Cold? I think it's still the number one bestseller in a few categories
Nice.
on amazon.com and .au. Foreword was written by Dr. Samantha Bailey and was reviewed and edited by Dr. Mark Bailey and a team of other doctors and health professionals. I had a psychologist and a microbiologist and virologist work on this with me as well, with a couple of other MDs. Dr. Jordan Grant played a role there as well, which I'm eternally grateful for. So we did our best to dot our I's and cross our T's and present the information in a way that is unbiased, that people can look at it and interpret the information the way that they see fit and then make their own conclusion. So we don't want to make that conclusion for people. We'll be out on lulu.com soon. Not sure when, the next maybe couple of weeks to a month. Ebooks on the way, and the audiobook version is being recorded over the next 3 to 6 months by Dr. Samantha Bailey, so people can keep their eyes out for that one as well.
Cool. So she's doing the voiceover.
She is. Yep.
Oh, lovely. Sounds like you had a hell of a team working on that.
Yeah, look, I think it's really important, this book. I think it has the power to change the world. I really do. If people are willing to see the information for what it's worth. Now, there may be resistance there, and that's okay. Everyone can interpret it and read it the way they want. But it's at the end of the day, the claim is healthy people and sick people together at the same time equals more sick people. And it hasn't been shown. It hasn't been demonstrated. So that in and of itself disproves empirically that this phenomena is possible. So we go through all of those studies, and then I provide other alternative explanations as to why people might get sick. And we talk about environmental phenomena, changes in temperature and humidity, the way in which atmospheric compounds like ozone and nitrous oxide and various other compounds fluctuate from changes in temperature and humidity, and how that may influence the respiratory tract and result in specific symptoms. Yeah, there's a raft of other explanations out there as to why people might get sick, and hopefully it will leave people wondering and asking the question, can you really catch a cold?
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that's the thing. Like we know, as you've pointed out, that the claim, the contagion claim, the idea, the essence of the idea hasn't been proved. It has never been proved. And yet when we look at, well, how does nature work? How does the body work? We realize that if we can just set aside the contagion sort of paradigm, invariably we find maybe several or many different potential explanations for what causes a symptom, for why someone might have a symptom. And those explanations are generally much more convincing and also much more evidentially supported. And that's something that is a really important message to get through to people, so that we can, you know, disentangle ourselves from this, not just medical system, but it's a mind control system. It's a social control system. There's layers to it, and essentially you've obviously dismantled the whole framework and the whole propaganda sort of paradigm of contagion and the last 4 years of COVID-19.
Yeah, just quickly, because people might be saying, well, if it's not contagious, then what is it? I've offered maybe half a dozen more alternative explanations as to what's going on. And there's like all of those are possibilities. One possibility as to what happened in 2019 in specific regions in China when people were getting this sort of new respiratory illness was that there was a thing called a temperature inversion that happened, where usually you get the sun heating the earth and you get a layer of hot air close to the earth. Hot air rises and takes the pollution away with it. Now, when you get a temperature inversion, when there's a change in the humidity and temperature, you get a cool layer of air that caps off, that acts as a lid and traps that hot air at the ground level. So the pollution never gets lifted up and away, and it traps that pollution close to the ground.
Mm.
Now, the healthy level of air pollution in the air, as outlined by peak health institutions and organizations around the world, is 5 micrograms per cubic meter. When there was a temperature inversion in these locations in China where these outbreaks happened, the levels went to 700 micrograms wow. per cubic meter. So the healthy level's 5, these pollution levels went to 700. It's equivalent to smoking more than 2 packs of cigarettes in a day. And this lasted for weeks and weeks and weeks. So like there is a potential alternative explanation as to why people were getting these weird respiratory tract symptoms, is that they were breathing pollution, massive amounts of it. And all the people, many people in those areas got sick. Now, was something really spreading, or were they just being exposed to a common environmental factor, which was driven by changes in environmental conditions? And interestingly enough, health authorities can now use changes in meteorological conditions like humidity to predict when an outbreak is imminent.
Mm-hmm.
So when the levels of humidity drop below a certain threshold, within 4 to 6 weeks, there is quite often an epidemic or a pandemic that breaks out. So they're saying that the changes in humidity make your respiratory tract more susceptible to the viruses in the air. But there are other things, as I've just explained, that could also be playing a role here. So we just need to expand our minds and open up to the realm of possibilities that maybe the story that we've been told since childhood is possibly not correct.
Right, exactly right. I'm glad you touched on that, the origin story of C19. I've got other things I could ask you about, but we're also approaching the time where we probably should be wrapping it up. There was something that we kind of skirted around and touched on a couple of times, and I think maybe it'll circle back to that. Autoimmune is something that has really got its tentacles in a lot of people's brains, even in the alternative sort of world where, you know, people have woken up to like the manipulation and to a large extent, they don't believe in the narrative of the last 4 years, but they're hanging on to autoimmunity. And you know, I've encountered certain people, you know, on Facebook and stuff who are just absolutely committed to the idea and the concept. And, you know, usually because they've had some sort of, you know, symptomological phenomenon happening and they've been told that it's, you know, their body is attacking itself for some reason. We've got, you know, the medical medium guy who's still making, you know, doing a roaring trade off, helping people with their so-called autoimmunity. What are some of your thoughts around this?
The body doesn't cause disease. Symptoms are not the cause of disease. Symptoms are not the disease. So as we said, the damage happens first And then the symptoms come along to remedy the problem and bring the body back to homeostasis and balance. So when you have inflammation, this is a hallmark of autoimmune disease, the inflammation is the healing response. That is what inflammation is. It is your body's healing response. So to initiate a healing response, it means there must have been some damage.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that if you take a knife and like you cut some piece of your tissue, or you get a burn, or you fall and graze your knee, the damage happens first, and then you get the redness and the swelling and the pus and the exudate and all these other things and the scab forming. That's the inflammatory response. That's the healing response. So we know that from like an external perspective. Same thing on the inside. The damage to the tissue happens first, and then the body's got to go and clean it up and repair the damage. So with autoimmune disease, we look at some tissue and we see all this damaged tissue and lots of immune cells there. You go, oh, guilt by association must be the immune cells that have been attacking the tissue. But if you take a look into the literature, they show that people with autoimmune diseases have high levels of heavy metals and persistent organic pollutants in their tissue, which mainstream medicine says triggers an autoimmune response. It somehow damages the immune system so that it can't recognize self from non-self. Now, is that really what's happening? Or are you getting heavy metals and persistent organic pollutants and toxins permeating your tissue, and your immune system comes along and goes, oh man, there's a bunch of toxic waste in your thyroid gland, or there's a bunch of mercury that's been stored in some of your joints, in your fingers, in your hands. We better start cleaning that up. And then you go into this chronic inflammatory or chronic healing state where the body's desperately trying to remove this stuff from the tissue. But if the body doesn't have what it needs to get rid of it, or you're being constantly exposed to the same stuff, you're just in this constant state of healing.
Mm.
It's like you're scratching the scab off. Every time it heals, you scratch the scab off. So you just always got this chronic healing state, and we confuse it for autoimmunity. So I think that's what we're seeing with autoimmune disease. It's really just some sort of tissue poisoning or chronic tissue damage from an external input. It isn't your body. Your body's perfect. It's not doing anything wrong. It's not trying to actively work against you. It is trying its best to help you and to repair the damage from an external input.
Yeah, great. Great summary. Yeah, thanks for indulging me on that one. You know, I've encountered people who are, you know, there's this Guillain-Barre sort of thing. People think that there's a virus there or what have you. But you think more or less a similar thing, you know, toxicity, heavy metals, or whatever the case may be.
You know, it's interesting that we point our fingers at all these other things, like it's your body. It's your immune system. It's a virus. It's a bacteria. It's your microbiome. It's a compound in the food. It's the gluten, or it's a lectin or a phytate, or we're always blaming nature. Now, why would we do that when it's a known established fact that people are ingesting a credit card sized piece of plastic every single week in microplastic?
Jesus.
And that microplastic absorbs into your bloodstream. You breathe it in through your lungs. You ingest it in your food and in your water, and it gets absorbed into your bloodstream, and it goes and gets deposited in tissue. Why do we blame Mother Nature when we know that there's also persistent organic pollutants which are in everything, like pesticides and herbicides and fungicides and makeup and laundry detergent and the clothes that we wear and exhaust fume and brake dust and like this stuff is everywhere, right? And they call it persistent, a persistent organic pollutant, because it doesn't break down. It's there forever. They're mm-hmm. called forever chemicals. And that stuff gets absorbed into your body. So, like, we're being exposed to these toxic substances. They're in the tissue, and now the body's actively working to try and get it out. Now, depending on where, it's like some of these chemicals are lipophilic, which means they like to, they have an affinity for being deposited in fat. So now you get exposed to a lipophilic persistent organic pollutant, it gets deposited in your nervous system because that's full of fat. Now the immune system comes along and goes, oh, we've got to try and clear these toxins out of the immune system, otherwise it's going to be damaged beyond repair. Now all of a sudden I've got Guillain-Barré, or I've got Parkinson's, or I've got peripheral neuropathy, or I've got some other disease. We have to look at these toxic insults first before we even go anywhere near starting to blame Mother Nature or the human body. It's completely backwards thinking. And I think that's done on purpose.
Mm.
Because if we do actually realize that it's the poisons and all this toxic crap that we're being exposed to that's making us sick, and it's not the body, and it's not the natural compounds in the food, and it's not Mother Nature, and it's not the immune system, and it's not any of these things, we've got to look at the culprit. We've got to address that monster hiding under the bed. And when you do that, every single industry is going to have to clean up its act. Because every single industry relies on material to produce infrastructure that is produced from petrochemicals and plastics and all this shit, right? Then the agricultural system has to clean up its act. It's got to stop using pesticides and herbicides and fungus. Like, this is the reason why they don't look at the true cause. Because then the broader societal implications for that are, we have to change the automotive industry. We've got to change the way that the construction industry does business and start using more natural alternatives. We can't keep polluting the waterways. We have to be mindful about what's getting flushed down the toilet, pharmaceutical drugs and hormones and all these other things going into the water supply now. We've got to look at all the things that are being sprayed on our food. We've got to look at what our clothes are being made out of. We've got to look at everything, man. Like, you can no longer use nature as the red herring when you realize that actually it is the poisons and the toxins and these man-made forever chemicals that's probably the overwhelming cause of a lot of our problems.
Yeah.
So that's an uncomfortable predicament for a lot of industries when this understanding comes to the forefront of a lot of people's minds.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well said. Good overview as well. And it's almost like, you know, when we look at it like that, I start to see, you know, the autoimmune label as being a very kind of insidious form of gaslighting in a way. Like, you're blaming the victim. Oh, well, your body's just gone. It's gone a bit apeshit and it's after itself now. We don't know, but there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. It's your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not us. It's not anything that we've been putting in the water or the air or any of the other poisons and stuff in the body. And then if it is, it's that it damaged your body. Your body wasn't strong enough to thwart the effects of the poison. And now your immune system's gone haywire and we're going to try and fix the immune system. Like, it's just, yeah, it's such backwards thinking. And look, I might be completely wrong. Like, the body may attack itself. Yeah. And I might be wrong about all this stuff to do with disease, but wouldn't it make sense, like, thinking logically here, that you would want to get rid of that stuff out of the environment anyway?
Right.
That you wouldn't want to continue spraying your food with poison? That you would want to look after the environment and the soil a bit better so your food's more nutritious? That you're not polluting the air so you're breathing toxic PM2.5, which is one of the most hazardous substances known to man? Like, wouldn't you just want to do that anyway? And then if there's still problems after that, then we can start looking at, right, well, what's the immune system really doing, or what's the other systems of the body doing? Because all of those things confound the end result. We don't know what's really going on when all those other things are at play. So you have to take those things out of the equation first, and then when every other factor's been ruled out, then you start looking at nature. But if you start blaming nature first, that's a problem. And the very first thing we said at the start of this thing was that there is no disease in people who live in harmony with nature. So by de facto, it can't be nature doing it. So it's got to be something that we're doing.
Right, exactly right. I was going to say it. If you didn't say it, I was going to go, well, Daniel pointed out at the start, these indigenous populations, they didn't have these problems. So logically, when you put the puzzle pieces together, what does that tell you? It becomes pretty obvious at that point. So yes. Well, I think I'm going to have to call it here, mate, but it's been great chatting. Before we go, can you just remind people, Daniel's book is called Can You Catch a Cold? You can get it on Amazon and it'll be available on Lulu soon.
That's right.
Yep, and he's also got his own podcast over at, is it called Humanly?
Humanly, yep.
Humanly.
HumanLey.com.
Awesome. So you go and check that out too, guys. But I definitely recommend everybody should read this book. I can already tell it's aside from the fact that Daniel's obviously done massive amounts of research, he's had a pretty crack squad of people, looking over the manuscript for him as well. So it's going to be good. It's going to be pretty watertight, I think. So go and check it out, everybody. Daniel, anything you want to just like say to wrap up with? Any last words or thoughts, mate?
Yeah, it's just to let people know that achieving good health is easy. You have the power. Once you understand that your body's not working against you, Mother Nature's not working against you, that your body can heal itself, you just need to give it what it needs and remove what it doesn't, then you have everything that you need to achieve a great health or to achieve great health and a great life. Doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. It's very simple. May not be easy. So it takes time and attention and focus to achieve these things, but it is within everyone's grasp, and it's not this mysterious, unachievable thing as we've been led to believe.
Exactly right. Well said. I second that wholeheartedly. And with that, I guess we'll wrap it up for now, mate. Thanks for joining me for a chat.
Thanks so much for having me, Brendan. I really appreciate it.
I just wanted to let you know that we have now introduced private members-only Q&A sessions into the Truthiversity. This is something that our members will have access to. So if you want to ask your questions of the experts on the podcasts and get answers in real time, then head over to truthiversity.com and become a member. I'll see you inside. Cheers.